Welcome back to another episode of Alpine Worlds, the Four Season Mountain Show podcast. Today's episode is dedicated to our dear friend Brent Orton. While kayaking on the Meleza River in Switzerland, Brent got stuck in a recirculating feature and never resurfaced. Brent, you were one of the greatest kayakers of all time, and even more than that, a very inspiring person. Your strong belief in humility and your effort to make this world a healthier and happier place, especially for those who are not as privileged as many of us probably are, left a big mark on me, on the kayaking community, and I'm sure far beyond that. Your passion for kayaking, the stoke you had every time we went on the river, was unique, and I think I can clearly say you have been the most motivated kayaker I've ever met. It's very impressive for me, after so many years, you still had so much fire for this sport. And what makes me really happy is that you have been so happy all the time you have been on the water. And I can assure everyone that you have been the happiest person until your last seconds. Thank you for everything, brother. You will be missed and never forgotten. Your positive energy and approach will not be forgotten and hopefully inspire a lot of us to keep this spirit going, to keep your spirit going and make this world a better place. It's a tough time for all of us who knew you, Brenny, and I guess it's maybe a bit too early to talk or to find more words about everything, what happened and the accident. So, but I do think it's like a good moment to think about and to talk about risk and our thoughts about risk and how we deal with it in general. And yeah, that's why I'm here with Jakob today, and we're going to share some of our personal thoughts about risk and dealing with risk. All right, so yeah, Jakob, it's a crazy time. It's not only Brent, which we lost in the last week, but also another friend, Tom, which died on Minigerode, one of the more known steep skiing classics in our region.
Yeah, Tom was very active in the Protecta Winters Italy team, and I have the feeling that sometimes it's just accumulating in certain times accidents, and it hurts really deeply when such good friends or even amazing people are losing their lives in the mountains or elsewhere doing sports and stuff like that. So it's also a topic which takes a lot of my time thinking about, you know, like how much risk are we taking when we are out there, how much residual risk is there even if you try to minimize the risk with different techniques. And because sometimes when I do something which seems quite dangerous to me, I try to at least do everything possible to keep the risk as low as possible. But then there is always this residual risk, and yeah, sometimes it's hard to understand how high it is.
Yeah, sure. Also for me, it like those moments and those times really are the moment where you question yourself, or where I question myself, like what I'm doing and what we are doing, and if it's like the right thing to do, and how much risks we are really taking or not taking. Because for me, like honestly, I do have like the strong belief that it's not gonna happen to me. Otherwise I wouldn't do it. Like, yeah. Honestly, I cannot, you know, I have this belief that that it's not going to happen. And I'm pretty sure about what I'm doing. Like, most of the times, I feel pretty sure that it's going to go well.
Yeah, I think that very often we are, as you said, very convinced about that we are doing the right thing and that we eliminate so many risks in with the actions we do when we are out there. But then I think that there is very often this residual risk which is always there, even if you go to the resort and shredding some powder with friends. It's for me residual risk is when something happens and afterwards you can't find a real mistake which has been made. You can't say, this guy
searched for it. He really pushed it so hard.
Yeah,
that it was sort of clear.
Or this guy had an accident with his paraglider, but he completely flew into the wrong spot, and I would never do that. Then for me, it's not the residual risk. But when there is an accident where you say, "Fuck, that's just bad luck," and this could also happen to me, then in my opinion, we are talking about the residual risk, and the residual risk is pretty much, it's always there. I think it's very often also not connected to the risk level of your mission. It can be also when you're driving your car to the city. There is always this little risk that something happens. And very often, for me, it seems like that accidents are happening very often when you're not doing an extreme thing, when you're not that focused, when you not try to really minimize the risk with a lot of different things, when you just say, for example, today we just go shred the resort with some friends and that's like a pretty nice face, let's ride it. And you don't talk about avalanches before, you're not that focused. I don't know, maybe sometimes even go together somewhere. I just think about my own case when I was involved in an avalanche close to my home on the Shannon Kinnick. It was avalanche danger tree, but I knew that it was kind of a spicy tree. So I went up to Shannon Kinnick, which is a very basic route and which you also do when it's very dangerous because it's like a super flat, mainly in the trees. And so, and actually there I had my most critical avalanche situation so far. And I was completely not expecting it, or I was not nervous when I went up there thinking about, I'm taking a lot of risks today or something, and bam, it just happens. Mm.
But that is the thing, like, you know, it's sort of easy to say that a lot of accidents happen not in like a situation where we'd say this is like on the more extreme side of things, because I guess a lot of us are doing, you know, like taking bigger risks once in a while, you know, when you want to kayak something really big, like a big stout, or you want to ski like something really steep, a big face or something. And I do agree, it's not that most of the accidents happen in like those super extreme situations, you know, same with Brandon, same with many of other friends, which unfortunately passed away. A lot of the times it just happens, as you say, in like situations which are in a way sort of normal for us, you know, like in a way, like for us, you know, sort of like an almost regular everyday situation, as we are out there a lot. But also saying that, surely like doing sports where accidents can happen increases this residual risk.
For sure. I mean, and that's the critical point for me. When something happens to someone I know, or even to someone I don't know, and afterwards I can't take away anything from it, what I can learn, that makes me really nervous, makes me thinking a lot, makes me rethinking what I'm doing, because I can't learn from it. And
you can't justify it, and you can't find an excuse for yourself while it wouldn't happen to you.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you know, same thing with Ren. Like, yeah. he was one of the very best kayakers out there, and we ran a river which is like hard, but you know, like totally on the normal side for us, and it just can like simply happen to all of us, and that is residual risk, and it's so scary.
Yeah, I remember Bran. I only met him for a few times, but he, apart from being one of the kindest and most humble persons I've ever met, he always seemed to me a guy which is really thinking about what he's doing, yeah, and taking the things he does very
seriously.
And apart
from that, like having a skill level, which to me, you know, there's like some few people out there in the sport almost to be almost untouchable, you know, like it's not going to happen to this guy. Like same, I'd say same in skiing or same in climbing. There is like a few people out there where you say, yeah, but it's not going to happen to them because they are really good.
Yeah.
And it barely happens. A lot of the times it happens actually not to the best ones, but you know, as if we look towards mountaineering or skiing, like, you know, David Lama, Hans-Jörg Auer, like Uli Steck, all those people, they were the best ones.
It can pretty much happen to everyone, I would say. But yeah, as I said, for me, it's getting very complicated if I can't find the mistake. Even if I also do mistakes, obviously. But at least if something happens, I can take something away and I can find a mistake and somehow make my own actions more safe because of the things I learn from other people. But when it comes to an accident where I really can't take away anything, then I'm really starting to think about how high is the residual risk of the sport which we are talking about. And I think we're talking about many sports today. But obviously now kayaking is very, very present at the moment. And
yeah, I think in kayaking, it's not like that usual, you know, as it is in skiing. Like in skiing, you have like this avalanche risk, which can really be random. Like, you know, we can all, and I guess a lot of the people which are doing it sort of like on a daily basis and as their job, are taking many safety measures, like doing column tests, checking the snow layers, and so on, which we all do. But then you still have like this, I'd say almost huge residual risk when it comes to avalanches or rockfall when we are talking more about mountaineering. But in kayaking, it's a little bit different. Like I'd say it's, there's not so many question marks out there.
Yeah,
there is because it's so hard to judge the water, but I'd say it's more likely that an accident is caused, like usually not something random is just happening, you know, like it's not like you're paddling something and you have a flash flood. Yeah, that can happen, but that I would compare that more like to an avalanche, you know.
I think in kayaking, as you said, yeah, it's more predictable because you can watch the water, you can see how it's doing, and you can somehow make your own idea of what would happen if.
And you can save a lot with skill. Like,
yeah,
you can save a lot with skill.
For sure. The only thing which I think about kayaking when it comes to residual risk is that you're moving in water. And as soon as you're under the water, you have a very short amount of time to get back up. I mean, obviously, usually you just roll up.
Or you just swim out.
The thing is, if somehow, for some reason, you stay under the water, you have pretty much no time to act. And
way less than in an avalanche.
Yeah, you have way less time. I mean, in an avalanche, it's more accessible. For other ones, like I think in kayaking, very often you are in a place where you cannot just dive down and take someone out. It's water. It has a massive power. In an avalanche, if someone is on top and you are buried, he can just go down, dig you out. I mean, it sounds easy now. There are 100 examples of when it's not possible to do that. But
for sure.
But still, it seems more I think as soon as you get stuck in the water, it's a huge problem.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen often. I mean, you are more experienced in that, but what I know, it's not happening often. And then there is this other kind of bad luck situations. You break your paddle, you go into a zone where you would never go without having a broken paddle or stuff like that.
I think it's probably more comparable to steep skiing. You know, if we think about our other good friend, Robbie, which passed away 2 years in the river, most likely he had a gear failure, like his paddle broke. And I guess that's sort of like more comparable to steep skiing when, for example, your binding breaks. Like in steep skiing, a lot of the times you wouldn't die because of an avalanche, but because of a mistake.
Because of a mistake or because of a gear?
Because of gear, or, you know, maybe also there is also like bad luck out there, sort of bad luck when you like do a turn and you hit a shark and lose balance and you fall. But I'd say like kayaking is more in that sort of like range. It's riskier in general than maybe like powder skiing. Like, you know, the risk which is really there is probably higher, but the randomness is maybe a bit lower. And I'd say it's the same with skip skiing. It's probably more predictable than like free riding.
Yeah.
But the general risk is just like the base risk is just higher. Like the.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, you could now open up the statistics look throughout the accidents and stuff. You would maybe find some more information, but then. For me, I was also thinking many times, I should just look through the statistics to just get a feeling for what we are doing. I mean, I think I have a good feeling for what we are doing, but still it's interesting for me. And I mean, everything I know more is giving me advantages of what I'm doing. But then there is always this thing, I mean, you and your crew, you are kayaking on the highest level in the world, and the statistic includes everyone. Yeah. So it's so hard to say, like, in general, kayaking is more dangerous than skiing or I don't know, because you...
Yeah, that's you, also you, not you, we want to say. That's not what no. we want to say. It's just to analyze.
Yeah. But for me, it is somehow interesting. Because I do many sports and I can choose what I do, and I can choose what I do a lot and what I do less. And if I would know that on this sport, the residual risk is way higher than another one, I would not stop the other one, but maybe I would try to pick out the good and nice days and maybe
eliminate the more questionable.
Yeah, or maybe spend more time on a sport which is also nice for me, but I have less residual risk. And so for me, it would be nice if I would have more information about what I'm doing. I think I have a feeling for it.
Yeah. I mean, we are not scientists, you know, like, and that's also not what I want to be. Like, I'm a human being and I'm sort of like living with feelings. Yeah. And, you know, like doing stuff which feels right to me. And that's also sort of what I want to keep. But yeah, your idea of, you know, like getting a little bit influenced by the statistics is good. But then on the other hand, I still believe that, like statistics, they're not lying that much, you know, like they're there. But on the other hand, also, I believe that if you're unlucky, you're gonna be unlucky. Like, it doesn't matter what you
do. Yeah, for sure.
So, you know, like, sure, I'm not gonna, or like, for me personally, I would love to wingsuit and to base jump. But at the moment, first of all, I don't have the time for it. But second of all, it just seems to me, I don't have the statistics, but it just seems to be that I would put myself into even higher residual risk or higher, in a riskier lifestyle.
Yeah.
So I just don't do it.
For me, it's the same with speed flying. I have the feeling when I paraglide that I would be a really, really stoked speed flyer.
Oh, for sure.
I just love to fly super close to the ground. I'm more scared when I'm high up when thermal flying than when I'm super close and fast. I'm pretty much not scared. And just when I think about to fly down with the speedy, with the 8 square meters or 6 square meters wing, super close to the trees and everything, it would be amazing. But as you said, I'm not scared that I will crash into a tree or something, but I'm scared of the residual risk. If just something happens, I'm probably dead. You know, like
there is
pretty much no margin. The same is with base jumping. If the wing or if the base dust opens, you're just dead. I mean, I think the risk that it's not opening is super low. Someone just told me.
Yeah, but you can have like, I said again, we are not doing it, but you can have like a twist, or it can open like 180 towards the wall, or you know, stuff like that.
Or you can just lose control in the air.
Or just miscalculate something and think that you can track over an edge, which you in the end can't. And you
just talking about today, I was in Dovterol and a good friend of mine did the base jump from a tandem, and everything went well at the end, but he kind of got out of control in the air, and then he opened the parachute in a not so good position. And he was like 4 times twisted, and he was able to get out of the twist, and he landed. But I mean, he's a really, really good paraglider. And I was just thinking, like, he's now base jumping, I don't know, since a few months. And I would consider this situation as kind of a close call. I don't know.
It seemed like
this could have gone pretty wrong also. And then I'm thinking about myself, or I'm just thinking about this guy was paragliding for 20 years and he probably had, I don't know how many, but I just guess, but maybe 5 close calls when paragliding. And he is base jumping since 3 months and I just randomly stand there and I see a close call. I don't know. I don't want to anything.
It's just
it could be also just bad luck at that moment. But these things seem to me, as there are many sports which have even a way higher residual risk. And so, as I said, also speed flying and stuff like that. I would love to do it, but I try to keep myself just away from it. To not expose myself into even higher risks than I'm now, and
yeah, sure, that is like that's what I do as well, like 100%. And you know, also I think it also really depends in which sort of community you are, because I've been in Chamonix lately, and you see what people ski there, like it's like when a lot of people do something on a really high level all the time and with sort of like a pretty high, they're okay with a pretty high risk, it starts to get normal, or it starts to feel normal in the head. And I feel that as well with kayaking. If we are like, for example, in Norway, the last years, high water, everybody's like on their A game. We're having sick lines, sick runs, and obviously it's insanely sick if you like kayak something on high water, and it's powerful, it's intense. And you do that a few times and you sort of like level up, and it starts to feel normal. And people, you know, everybody around also thinks within this crew or within this community just starts to interpret this as a normal thing. But if you think back a few years, this was absolutely not normal. Like
this was considered as very extreme.
Yeah, or like almost like loose. And if I guess the same is with steep skiing. If you look at Chamonix, what people ski there, like on a daily basis now, was considered insanely or very extreme, like once in a lifetime sort of line. If you would ski the north of Gildemidi or something like that, you know?
Yeah. I don't know how it is.
It's just normal, you know?
Yeah.
And many, many people are dying. Right?
I don't know how it is, how in Chamonix it developed during the time, but I'm pretty sure you can say what in Chamonix is pretty normal. On another place, it would be completely crazy or even unrunnable.
Yeah, 100%.
If we look around here on our mountains, there is not this culture of extreme skiing. And when I talk about extreme skiing, I really talk about like really extreme skiing between ice and rocks where it's not anymore.
It's barely skiing.
It's barely skiing. Like, it's
skiing
it's
climbing routes.
Riding a line on skis.
Or getting going down a line.
Getting down a line on skis. And I think like here you could do a lot of stuff like that, but nobody does it.
Exactly. Like I like saying that, I have full respect for everyone who does that and for everyone who enjoys that, like 100%.
Yeah,
it's just an observation. It's just interesting how I guess like dynamics also in a group sort of move your feeling of risk.
Totally. I mean, when I started with ski touring, which is actually not so long ago, I started with this classic routes. And then I went to the extreme classics, you know, and the extreme classics felt very extreme to me. I felt like, wow, dude, you're doing like pretty naughty shit here. And if I look at that now,
which is like three, four years ago,
if I look at it now, it's like, it's pretty boring. I try to find a new line on that mountain. I'm not going to do the extreme classic or stuff like that. And I'm not saying that proud. For sure not. I'm saying that, it's a fact.
It's an observation.
Just a fact. I think if you're out there for so many days a year, it's just an evolution of yourself. You know, you do this many times, and then you just go into steeper things and into more extreme lines, and they become normal, and the other ones become like. I mean, I still sometimes really enjoy to do something mellow. But especially when it comes to filming, when it comes when I haven't skied since a few days, I really want to go for it. Then I look for a line which brings me
a challenge.
Yeah,
which is
a challenge for me, and which is not like an exhausting hike to a summit and then easy ride down. So I'm looking for a challenge, and the challenge obviously always gets higher. And then I think I came to a point, but already, I think it was when we were in Norway the first time. I think that was probably the point where I stopped doing more extreme stuff. I think you reach a level. And you also understand that maybe now you really need to take wise decisions. You really need to prepare your adventures, your missions. And I think then you pretty much come to a point where it stabilizes a bit. But then, especially in the beginning, you step up very fast. You know, you do a couloir, which is 40 degrees, then you go 50 degrees and stuff like that. And it goes pretty fast. And then it always gets slower. And I think also now, I'm on a point where I have some lines in my mind, which I want to do. But I also enjoy just a good day in the resort with friends, or just something which is maybe way less dangerous than other things, you know.
But yeah, that is the point. And that is the point where I want to get in again, which is way less dangerous. I don't think so. Like, I don't necessarily think that some of the steeper lines we do are that more dangerous than a good day in the resort in France. I think there may be a little bit, and it all adds up, you know, but in the end, it's probably more likely that an accident happens on a day in the resort with your friends. Or maybe not in a resort, but still, like, a lot of the accidents I see are happening in a situation which is sort of normal, you know, not like the line of the year.
Yeah, I totally agree on that. The thing is, if I'm talking about doing something every day, I'm pretty sure you can't ride an extreme line every day without having a very high risk some days.
You just don't do it every
because day. You just don't go because the conditions need to be perfect. Everything need to be really good. And then,
I mean, same with kayaking. You're not going to run like a 100-foot waterfall or like 150-meter long slide or gnarly rapid every day. Run it like, you know, once in a while. Yeah. And you still run like hard class five every day.
Yeah, and when I say I enjoy to do something which is less risky, I'm not going to say that the other thing which I do is not becoming a high risk situation when I do mistakes or when I not watch out what I'm doing. But for example, riding in a no-fall zone. You know, like riding in no-fall zone for me is always something where everything needs to be on point. You cannot crash. You cannot have a little slap. You cannot even
have a gear failure or something.
Yeah, gear failure. Everything gets more spicy, which doesn't mean that it's immediately more dangerous. Because when I ride no fall zones, I'm really focused and I really try to make everything as safe as possible. But still, if I would do that every day, then maybe it would get more dangerous because maybe I would not check my gear all the time. I would maybe ride the face, even if it's a little bit avalanche danger in there and stuff like that. So therefore, I say, I enjoy to do something more easy also. I think then the point is if you go to something more easy, that you don't lose the seriousness which you should have. And the respect for what are you doing. Because as you said, you can also have an avalanche.
I don't think we lost the respect, but many people do. And I also want to say that is something I was really respecting Brand for. Like Brand took every day on the river and every rapid very serious.
Yeah.
On the other hand, it's also scary because we do that as well and it still happens, you know, like that's still like, and that's exactly again this residual risk sort of thing. Like I wouldn't say we are going out there being silly, you know, just like doing things. I think we always try to have the highest safety measurement. And even if we are in resort shredding, we still ride one after the other.
Yeah.
And we still like check the snow layers and we still check the terrain around. Is there like spontaneous avalanches? Is there other avalanche activities? And so on and so on.
That's something which I experienced very often. I mean, sometimes I have the feeling that people are thinking about me. This guy takes a lot of risk or this guy is crazy in his head and stuff like that. And then, for example, I go to Resort and I have the feeling that I'm one of the guys, which wants to have first tracks, which wants to ride the nice lines. But I see stuff there where I think, what the fuck are you doing? Like, this is completely, completely stupid.
Yeah, for sure. Like, how many times it happened that we would, you know, like, you would go to the gondola and people are like, oh yeah, this guy, you know, like you feel that they're like looking through and like, oh yeah, that's like the crazy dude, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, and then you go up to the resort and first thing you see is like, you stand, like that happened this year. You stand on a face and we are sort of like, I don't know, I'm sure you remember this situation. We were like standing on this face and like, how are we going to do it? Like, where's the safe spots? Who's going to go first? And we stand there and suddenly like those three guys which said before, like, oh yeah, like now you're really extreme sort of thing, like came from behind three together, like bam into the face. What the?
Totally. And in these moments, then I'm thinking again, okay, you are you're for sure doing stuff which where there is risk involved and stuff like that, but you're still someone which has kind of a respect for what you're doing. I don't want to say that, I don't want to say anything, you know, about how much risk I take, because sometimes it's even hard for me to understand
hard to judge,
how much risk I take. But that's just what I experience and I just want to share it.
The bad thing, again, about residual risk, in my opinion, and about statistics, again, is that you just simply increase your risk when you do it a lot. And that's also what our father says all the time. And that's a matter of fact. That's also why I have the strong belief, or for me at least, you know, like my approach is the one that I can only allow myself to go out there pretty much every day. It doesn't matter if it's kayaking, paragliding, skiing, or climbing. If I really, really, really try to do everything to keep the risk as low as possible. Because what I, like another thought I always have is like, you can drive to Milan once in a year, 250 kilometers an hour on the highway. Like, you know, you could do that once and most likely, like really high chance, nothing is going to happen. But do that every day, you're not going to survive a year.
Yeah, totally.
So I believe you get away with a lot of stuff if you do it once, you know, like, or yeah, like you do 3 ski tours a year with, and that's all. And on these 3 ski tours, you won't have the sickest day of your life. You're a really good skier. And you send like some insanely like crazy stuff with pretty high avalanche risk. Most likely, or there's a good chance that you're going to survive. But try and do that every day.
Yeah. And the opposite is those people, which are many, which only have time on the weekend, or even worse, which go on holidays to somewhere, and there is, for example, like really bad weather for the whole week, and then there is this one day which is really good, and then they go like just all in and they risk everything, you know. And if you see that, and they even like maybe they score one of the sickest lines, and then I have the feeling, oh fuck you, man, you should also go for it. I mean, you are like kind of a professional, and they score one of the sickest lines, and you just sit at home and say, no, it's too dangerous. But then I realized that thing, as you just explained.
And most likely they are still safer than we are. Like, I don't want to say anything against their decision taking. I can totally understand it. And they are, maybe, you know, I don't know. Depends on how hard they go, but they are probably, they're maybe even safer than we are. Obviously, like, doing it more often and doing it very regularly, you also increase your experience and your skills. So there, on the other hand, it's not like a one-on-one relation that if you go out 100 times a year, you have 100 times higher risk than if you would go out once a year. You have maybe like a little bit more, but still you have a little bit more. And that's like, it all comes back to this idea which I have in my, or which I made up in my mind since, I guess, quite a long time, that for me the only option to go out there a lot and to do many, many sports, which sometimes also have deadly accidents, the only way I can support myself doing this is really, really trying to do everything I can to make it as safe as possible.
Yeah, I agree on that. Then the question which sometimes comes up is, even if I do everything to make it as safe as possible, how high is my residual risk even if I try to make it as safe as possible? And yeah, which sport should I maybe avoid more? And it's super hard, you know, when something happens like with Bran, I would say, oh, you really need to take care when you go kayaking, it's super dangerous. But then something happens in skiing, and then you say like, oh fuck, skiing is super dangerous. It's always kind of a feeling, and it's super hard to say, apart, at least in my opinion, from those very specific extreme sports which are standing out on risks very aggressively, I would say, like base jumping, speed flying. pretty much everyone,
high altitude mountaineering,
pretty much everyone agrees on it that it's super dangerous, that it has a very high risk.
Yeah, the statistics say so. Yeah. I don't do it, so I don't want to judge it.
For sure.
But yeah, I mean, also a lot of our friends, which like paragliding friends, which have a lot of experience and unfortunately have seen many friends pass away, told us, don't start speed flying. You know, that's like one thing which, and like this guy I'm talking about, he is sending it super, super hard all the time.
Yeah.
He's insanely skilled and talented and everything. And I would say he has a quite a bit higher risk tolerance than I do.
Yeah.
And if he tells me, man, just don't start speed flying, I sort of believe him, you know.
Yeah, because very often you have like this situation that someone random just comes to you and say, oh, you should not do that because this is very dangerous. And very often I have the feeling, okay, there is people which maybe have a way, way lower risk tolerance. And so I cannot really connect with them or like, you know, talk about risks with them because we have a different level of risk taking. But when there is someone where you are thinking like, okay, this guy has a pretty high risk level and I'm placing myself quite a bit lower and this guy tells you this is way too dangerous to do, then I'm like, okay.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm not going to do that.
It's still no statistics there, which we are talking about. And it can also, obviously, it's a very personal feeling again. It can also obviously just come from the fact that he has been in this community on quite a high level in maybe a time where the community in this sport was pushing it quite hard, you know, was on a quite general, quite high sort of risk tolerance level.
Yeah, it was the 2000.
Yeah, so
the 2000, there was this
the full cent years, yeah, the full, know, cent full years, phase, yeah. Let's fucking go,
yeah,
sort of years where you like, it might just be that he has just been in that period of time. And it also comes from his personal experience again. And that's just my personal experience or my personal feeling that for myself, I'm like, you know, I'm a bit just trying to not do it.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's,
yeah,
it's
but still,
absolutely no statistic.
But still, I don't think that you would tell now someone, don't start kayaking because it's super dangerous.
No, absolutely not.
But I think you could get to a point where you would say that.
Oh, for sure.
And I think if you would tell me, don't start kayaking, I mean, I'm a kayaker as well, so it doesn't really matter. But if you would tell someone in like 10 years, don't start kayaking because it's super dangerous, I think there is a pretty clear reason for that. And so
I think it comes down to personal experiences and losses you've had yourself, for sure.
Also for myself, when we were talking about how to find out which sport is maybe one of the more dangerous sports I do and stuff like that, I base it a lot on the experience I have, on the close calls or even on the situations where I say,
this could have gone wrong.
This could have gone wrong, or if the chance would have been quite high that this happens and then this would happen. And I try to analyze it and kind of make my own statistic on how dangerous how dangerous a sport is, how I do it. You know, because for example, I do paragliding, and when I thermal, I think I'm a very conservative thermal flyer, you know? And so I make my own statistic for my own experiences when thermal flying, you know? And I can say for myself that I pretty much never had a situation in thermal flying where I said, oh, this was like super dangerous or something like that. And so I can consider thermal flying for me now at the moment as kind of a quite safe thing, you know?
But again, like, we are talking maybe about the sport where a sort of dangerous situation goes really quick into like a fatal situation.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, compare it to steep skiing,
yeah,
where you're barely, like really rarely in a situation like, ooh, that was close. Like I was never.
Yeah.
You know, like steep skiing above a no fall zone. I was never in a situation where I was like, fuck, that was like close.
That's true. But I think in steep skiing, sometimes if you write something and while you write safely and everything, but while you write, you have the feeling, oh, this is really sketchy. Mm-hmm. And I think that's already a sign of, dude, it's quite dangerous what you're doing. Because if I feel uncomfortable writing very steep stuff or very, I don't know, technical things, I just remember the mini Gerode we wrote once with Aaron. I had a board which didn't really fit that style of riding, and it was a long time since I have done steep skiing, and I felt very
unsecure
in that moment. And yeah, and I think that's already kind of it's not a close call, but it's already a sign of, okay, this was quite dangerous, because if you feel unsafe,
it depends on the sport. Because you might feel like, as you say, you probably feel quite early, quite uncomfortable in thermal flying.
Yeah.
And then let's bring it a step up. Let's talk about climbing.
Yeah.
Like you climb on a crag which has like bolted bolts and it's super hard and it's maybe like overhang and even like exposed, or a multi-pitch route or alpine climbing. And on the paper, it's probably like pretty safe.
Yeah.
But you feel you feel like you would die every second.
You're just shitting your pants on a super safe activity at the end. Yeah, that's totally true. That's totally true. But yeah, still,
I think like there is some sports where you can have like sort of not close calls, but you know, like situations where like I was out of control. Let's say like free riding, you know, you crash, you cook like a cliff and you tumble or whatever, you know, or like a little avalanche, little slap or something. Like that was not good.
Yeah.
But there is other sports where these situations should just never happen. And that is like, steep skiing, some class 5 kayaking, continuous stuff where there is no pools and like just no mistakes allowed.
Yeah. I think highlining is a very good example of this thing. I don't do highlining, but like our friend Rollo is a very good highliner. He does a lot of crazy stuff, and he just says, "Dude, highlining is so." Goes so deeply in, and it's scary. Even if it's probably one of the safest sports out there, you're just secured on a harness, on a rope. If you fall, you fall down into the highland, like one meter, nothing can happen, and still you're shitting your pants when you do it. But yeah, obviously you need to take into consideration all of these things to make your own statistic about danger of the sports you're doing. But
it's so hard. And I think it's actually a good point that I sort of want to look into some statistics, always obviously knowing that it might take into consideration a group which doesn't really represent myself or our group. But it's still like sort of interesting to compare my own feelings about the sport to like a statistic.
Yeah.
But yeah, now I guess we talked very long about how risky something is. But I think there's like another topic which is interesting, at least for me, and it is how worth it is.
Yeah.
Like really... You know, like I just imagine like somebody who is not into action sports or not that much into action sports would just totally not understand what we and what a lot of our people do. Like, why would you even go skeetering? Why would you even go free riding? Why would you even go kayaking? Like, if you already know that you have the risk to die.
Yeah, and that's something where me as well, I have I think I have changed a little bit in the time. I think taking in consideration the residual risk we always have when we're out there, I try to pick out the days which are worth it, you know. I would maybe not go now for a super dangerous mission when everything is foggy, when the snow is bad. And that doesn't mean that when the weather is good and there is a beautiful sunrise, I ski something super dangerous or even more dangerous than I would usually do. But still, I try to avoid the days which are probably not worth the residual risk, you know?
Yeah, that is a very interesting approach.
That's something for me where I say, I mean, I know that when I go on a certain mountain, I know that there is this residual risk. And there could be also, the residual risk could be also quite high because it's a big mountain. There's spontaneous avalanches happening sometimes randomly and stuff like that. So I would really wait for the right moment and do it, but do it when everything is really nice and I really have an amazing day and I'm not just scrambling around in the fog and at the end it was just an average day, just to be able to say, yeah, I was out there, yeah, I did it, you know. But I don't know, that's just my opinion. But I think your question was also more about if it's even worth to do
in general
to do what we do.
Yeah Sure. Like you told me about that approach a lot, like even on a more macro sort of scale where you would say, is this line worth the risk? Or, you know, like, is this line or this project or this something or this waterfall, as matter, worth this extra risk which you're adding? That is a very scary thought for me because
It's a
risk
very...
is never really worth it. Like and that's very clear. Like nothing out there in the world is worth dying.
No,
like for sure. not for me, absolutely not. So where is the point? But on the other,
but still, you need to accept that we always have risk when you go out.
Yeah.
We have a certain amount.
I mean, everybody, every human out there, even you, if you're not doing any action sports, have a risk to die. And let's talk about smoking.
Yeah.
You are adding a lot or quite a bit of extra risk to your life. You're driving a car, you're living up in the mountain as we do at the moment, and you're driving a car up the mountain every day. You are adding a lot of extra risk. So in the end, if you like break it down a lot, you would need to stay at home, order your food with delivery, eat really, really healthy, don't smoke, don't drink, you know, like...
And let your body check by doctors
all the time.
Once a month.
But then what sort of life do you have? Like that is the very extreme side of things. And for me...
And I think therefore, you need to understand at least the tendencies of the risk of what you're doing. Because obviously... I would also tell someone I don't want to live a boring life, I go base jumping. I would tell him, wait a moment, there is other sports which are less risky, but still you're going to have like an adventurous life, you know?
Yeah, but that's what probably a lot of people would tell to us, like guys, like, why do you need to go whitewater kayaking? Why can you not, I don't know, play soccer?
Yeah, and I think therefore everyone has to make his own, create his own idea of what he wants to do. And I think you can also break it down to economy or I don't know, like if you risk a lot, you can get out of a lot, you know? But then you need to find your balance, which is okay for you.
Which makes you the happiest. And also saying that, another topic again, it's not just about making yourself the happiest, but we all have obviously some responsibility against a lot of people around us. And even if you don't have family and don't have a girlfriend and don't have kids, you still have friends, you know. And yeah, it obviously like scales up and it's different. Like you have a mom, you have, then maybe you have kids or, you know, a girlfriend, whatever. So I guess it's very different for everybody, and everybody probably also feels it different. I feel the responsibility sort of risk almost higher than my personal risk. Like, yeah, you know, think like super egoistic. If it's over, it's over. Like,
I
don't want it to be over. I love my life.
There is some scenarios which where I think, oh, this would be horrible for me to die. But there is other scenarios where I say, yeah,
it's so much easier.
It's so much easier
for you when you die than it is for all the people around. That is,
I feel, as you also said, I feel a very high responsibility against my parents, against the other people around me, and but I'm also glad for it. You know, I mean, it's a gift from one side as well to have those people around you, and it would be sad if I would have nobody around me and I would not have this response.
I have this one friend who's like, bro, I don't have anyone waiting at home.
Yeah.
And like on one hand, the idea or the thought behind sounds sort of like freeing, you know, almost on one side, almost amazing. Yeah. Like he's free, you know, he can really do what he wants himself without having to think about the people around. He still has friends, but it's different, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, as you say, it's a gift to have those people around, and I'm proud to feel this responsibility, and I'm proud to take this responsibility and make smart and, you know, try to make the smartest possible decisions in sort of the space where I am and what I do.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure. And I think,
but everybody will feel it different.
As we are talking, still it's super hard to judge the risk which you are taking. And I think by the time we will always, with every mission we do, we will get a better feeling for what are the risks, for how high are the residual risks and all those stuff, and we will probably adapt to it. Sometimes I also have the feeling, compared to similar people, I have the feeling, dude, you're not going for it enough, for that you want to reach, for that what you want to do, for the dreams you have, you don't go big enough, you don't. But then on the other hand, I think, it's fine.
Yeah,
it's all sure. Good. You're having a good time. It's great that you turn around when something seems sketchy to you. Even if later maybe it turns out that it wasn't sketchy, then I'm like super frustrated. And I think like, oh, fuck, why did I turn around? And then I rethink the whole situation. And then I say, okay, but it could be also the way around. You could have thought it's safe and went for it, and then it was unsafe, and then you're deaf. So it's better to turn around a few times more.
I think it's a sort of like a psychological game, which I like and which I like to support, is to be proud or to feel proud, you know, and also to like give this idea and this feeling to my friends and to the community and to the people I love. Just to be proud when you turn around and when you portage something, or when you set safety somewhere in kayaking. I think it's a very honorable thing to turn around and to do stuff like that. And I think it should also be, in my opinion, a cool thing and a thing where you like, you know, respect somebody really for these decisions. Already only from a psychological point of view.
Yeah.
Just to especially avoid the way around, because the way around would be very bad if somebody in a group would feel, or in a community would feel like bad or, you know, weak or something if he takes this decision to not do something or to turn around. And that for me would be the most horrible situation, where somebody does something which he's not 100% convinced about it himself, you know, because I usually only do things where at least I feel 100%, you know, almost 100% sure.
You have a good feeling with it.
That I got this.
You have a good feeling.
That it's going to be good and that I got this. And if, I guess, especially when somebody's like not feeling it 100% and maybe, you know, feels like, oh, fuck, I shouldn't, like, I'm so weak, you know, like, I would just feel bad.
Yeah, if or, you would even, turn around, or even
feel a pressure, you know.
Yeah, or even if you're in a group, it would be terrible if someone would say, no, guys, I'm not going to do this. And the group would say like, dude, what the fuck?
I guess that's barely happening.
Yeah, yeah.
But already the other side where somebody would do it because he would feel that way.
Yeah.
And then something would happen.
Yeah.
That would be like
or
horrible.
Someone does something because he thinks, I don't want to be the scared guy, or I don't want to be the loser in some kind or in some way. That would be horrible. But I think, at least in the bubble I live, it's very accepted.
Oh, 100%.
And I'm always honoring decisions. Turnaround decisions and decisions where someone says I'm not gonna do that, I honor that a lot, and I also think it should be something which even we have a big range on social media and stuff like that, which is something which you should also show to other people
thing.
To say, look, I also turn around. I think turning around is important. And just like share this vibe of you can do really cool stuff, but you should also take it serious, and you should also turn around when it's not good and stuff like that. Because very often I have the feeling, or I see on Instagram it's always the same, you know. On Instagram you always see
success stories,
you see big sands, you see if you go to certain Instagram profiles, you have the feeling, this guy is always succeeding, or he just goes up and does it, whatever, doesn't matter. Maybe also on my profile, I don't know, I think I have shared I've tried to share always when I did decision taking with whether it was turnaround missions and or compression tests, or even go into a phase with a rope. I think we always tried to show it, but still I think it's important to always
keep present. To like, you know, keep this healthy sort of vibe alive, where a turnaround decision or a decision to not run something or do something, which is not calling you by yourself, you know, because I always feel like when I do something, and that's also the space where I'm the most happiest and performing the best. When I, for example, you know, walk up to a waterfall and I almost need to hold myself back, I'm like, Matthias, but it is very risky. But inside my heart, or inside, you know, myself, I'm like, but I really, really, really want to do that. I really want to ski that down. I really want to do that waterfall. And I can like play this game with myself, where I would like put the risk side of things against my personal excitement and against my personal, you know, like energy, where I want to do it, and like compare these two sides. And then I think I can really take a good decision, and then I think it's also worth it, because then when you're gonna run it, you feel that you gifted something to yourself, and you're like, you know, now today I just do it, and I really see it as a gift that I'm allowed to do it today, because I can take the risk. And then you also, for me, I really love the moment, and I can really, you know, enjoy every friction, every second of it, and that is like an amazing feeling. And again, on the way around, it's not such a pleasant feeling when you're just super scared and you feel, you sort of, you know, should do that now because it's the right thing to do because you
but,
know you're
yeah,
you're
a certain you don't person have a good feeling. Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah, for sure.
I think that that vibe is very healthy and very good to keep alive.
Do you feel any pressure from your sponsors?
Not at all. Not at all. Like, I think as sad as it is, as it is, but most of my sponsors have had team members passing away. And it's not a new thing that, that people die doing sports, especially on like a very high level. And I think there's been a lot of change since the 1990s, where everything was just cool and fuck yeah and send it.
Yeah.
To where we are now. And I think part of it is also the video side of things, that today it's not only about black and white, how crazy the thing is what you did, but also on what value you can bring to the people around you and to the community, and the value you usually nowadays bring with photos or videos or something where the people around you, you know, can get in touch and can have something out of your adventure. And I guess especially in like super, super gnarly situations and super on the edge missions, it's just almost impossible to film. So these things automatically already lost are losing a little bit of value, because if I am 100% on my limit, I'm not going to think about turning, like I do turn my GoPro on, but yeah, like I'm not going to be able to make a very amazing video.
Yeah, I think there have been quite a lot of situations, especially in the 2000, like, yeah, where like people just like went full on and just, oh, now we have a helicopter filming us, just yeah, let's send it, let's do the craziest shit ever. But yeah, to get back to this question, I also have felt 0% of pressure from my sponsors. And that's also something which is super important for me.
Yeah.
I could never
support myself.
Yeah. I could never do what I do when I have the feeling that I'm letting push myself by sponsors or stuff like that. That would be terrible, because it's not worth to die just because of a sponsor. I mean, as we said,
there's nothing out there worth to die.
There is nothing out, and even to take a little bit higher risk and stuff like that, it's just not worth it. I think the only thing which is worth it, if it makes you happy, and if you are fine with the risk level you're taking, and that does depends on sponsors or anything, or on filming.
I'm very strict with myself there, like maybe, and I guess it's okay, maybe even a little bit extra strict, especially when it comes to filming, because that's what you do a lot nowadays, where I'm questioning a lot of the times, is this still, you know, supportable and something I would do also without filming? And yeah, maybe I'm a little bit pre-burned with that, but I really feel like that I'm checking on myself a lot, especially when it comes to filming. If this is like, you know, not motivated by the filming itself, yeah, because I don't want that.
Yeah, I remember one of the
sure it influences. Like it would be ignorant to say that it would not influence you.
No, for sure.
Like also social media and everything around. Like everything obviously influences and sort of like pushes you, you know.
Yeah, for sure. That's for sure. But still, I think one of the very you know, like the moments where it gets very clearly, like when we went up to Hochjoch the second time to ski a pretty serious line for sunrise. Pretty much everything is over, no fall zone. And yeah, we wanted to go back there to ride it faster, to ride it with a higher pace. We already knew the face and stuff like that. So we organized two filmers, Mario and David. We were hiking up the whole night. Mario came all the way in from Innsbruck, digged himself an igloo on the bottom of the face. Everything was ready. And then we were halfway up on the face, so pretty much 300 meters below the summit. And we just said no. And there I was like, for a few seconds, I was like, fuck, we have David here, we have Mario here, everything is ready.
We have also put so much effort into it. We have been freezing the whole night. It was insane.
And then I thought like, yeah, you should just go up and do this. I mean, dude. And then I was like, no way. I mean, no, I would not do that if the camera guys weren't here. And so I'm also not going to do it now.
Yeah, like the motivation side of things was huge.
It was huge, yeah.
Like already the personal, let's even let away all the filming stuff. Like, you know, you started at 11 at night. You didn't sleep. You walked the whole night. You froze like, you know what? You hiked for the whole night. You've really, really, really suffered. And you're that close before success. Like already that side of motivation is huge.
But for me, if I realize in that moment, if I realize how high the motivation is, how high the possible pressure points could be, the filmers, the hiking during the night, everything, then I'm kind of getting like super in an alarm mode, you know, where I say, oh, wait. Just think about how high your motivation is and why is it so high. Yeah. And then just put all those things apart and make your decision thinking about if you would be here just we two without cameras, not even a head camera, not even an action camera.
And not even hike, and not even like, you know, take even away the suffering and everything.
Yeah. Everything away and just think about the situation we have here. We have this kind of snow, we have this kind of weather situation and everything, and just think, would I go up now or not? And then just take the decision and just go.
Very important, be happy with your decision. Yes. That day I really struggled. Like the whole day I always have like had like this thought back. I was like, fuck, like what, like why we didn't just went up? But like seconds after I was like, yeah, no, it was the right decision.
Yeah, I was the same. All the time during the whole day, always this thought came back, you played too safe. You were just too scared. It was actually safe. And still, I'm the opinion that it was kind of safe. But in that moment, because we were then shredding the whole day, we were riding similar lines in the resort and everything. And after the whole day, now, to be honest, I'm the opinion that...
We had one slap.
Yeah, we had one slap.
Just right at the end. And there were some faces which actually slipped out.
Yeah.
And saying that, on the way up, we had a very little slap.
Yeah.
So I think it was still... I'm still very convinced about that it was the right decision. But I do agree that we probably had a good chance that it would have been all good.
I think that it would have been... within our risk level taking, if we would have gone up to the top. But I'm very happy that we took that decision, because as I mentioned before, it would be super bad if you do the opposite of a decision when it's actually more dangerous than you think. So,
and based on the information we had at that point, like a little slap, quite a few avalanches around, and so on and so on, a lot of fresh snow, absolutely no fall zone, a big face on top of us, I think it was the only right decision to take in that moment. Looking back, you're always smarter.
Yeah, for sure.
Especially when something happens, you're like, it was the wrong decision.
Yeah. Probably. I don't know. But still, we cannot really know it. But as I already said, I'm always happy if I decide for turning around than if I decide to go up in a situation where it's always a big topic. Do we turn around or do we keep on going? In that situation, if I make a turnaround decision, I know it's really hard for me. I know it's really hard for everyone, but I always tell myself, just be happy about that. It's a good thing.
Yeah, sure.
It's only a good thing if you turn around. The other thing can be good.
No, it can be amazing.
It can be amazing. But the chance is also there that it can be horrible and it can be an accident or anything. So turnaround is always a safe and good decision.
Yeah, it's always never a bad decision.
That's good to remember.
Yeah.
And so I think we still...
I do believe it also generally makes you happier doing your sport. Like if you have that sort of mindset. Because if you don't have that sort of mindset and you're like frustrated because of decisions like that, you will be frustrated a lot.
Yeah, probably. And I mean, there are those people which pretty much always go.
Yeah.
There are those people. And they are also...
And some of them are lucky.
Yeah.
Some of them are lucky.
Very often
they're
lucky.
That's the thing. It's so unfair sometimes, you know?
Yeah.
But sure, you can be lucky, but you have a higher risk level. And yeah, I think I also don't want to judge anyone by anything, but that's just my personal approach and how I see it and how I feel, you know, can support also myself and support what I'm doing. And I truly support what I'm doing. Like to myself, I can stand behind what I'm doing and the risk I'm taking. And also the responsibility I have. Obviously, in times like now, it's really hard, and I'm questioning a lot of things, which is also fair enough and also good. But on the other hand, who would I be or without all the sports, and who would all my friends be? Who would Bran be without the sport? Like it would not be Bran, and we would have never known him.
Yeah, for sure.
And you know, like it's so many positive things which come with our sports as well, you know, so many positive sides, and it's so fulfilling for me and so amazing. And I think I would just not be that happy without, or really, like, you know, I would just not be as fulfilled as I am without the sports I'm doing.
Yeah, and I think that is the most important thing. And I think even maybe you change in a few years.
Yeah.
Maybe you take down your risk level. Maybe you step it up for certain reasons. I don't know. But I think the most important thing is that you think about those things. And you're convinced that what you're doing is fine. As like you do it.
You're in balance. You're in balance, with your risk level and with everything. So it's a hard balance to find, I guess, especially in like those moments. But yeah, it's important. I think it's crucial to find it.
Yeah. And it's super important to talk about those things.
Yeah.
And to think about those things. Because I think otherwise it's getting really hard to understand the dynamics, to understand what are you doing, how high are the residual risk, how high are the risk you are taking. And I think then something can go really wrong.
Yeah.
If something happens, because maybe your risk-taking level wouldn't have been that high, but you just didn't thought about it and you just went for it and, oh, fuck, that's super dangerous.
I think a lot of people don't want to think about the risk, don't want to have those thoughts, which I think is also a decision you can take yourself. And obviously, like, life is amazing and you know, like doing like some very big stuff is insanely amazing, and running some crazy stuff is insanely amazing. But I think as a like grown up human, it's sort of part of the game to also think about those things. Like,
yeah,
it might be easier to just don't think about it and don't take this stuff into consideration and just live life to the fullest and be like, yeah, let's go. But that's for me, it would be a little bit unresponsible.
Yeah.
For me.
Yeah. Yeah. One last thing about exactly that topic you just mentioned. Pretty often it happens to me when we are shredding resort or something, also with other people, that the vibe is pretty good. Everyone is super motivated and nobody talks about like what could happen or what are the risks or what we do if. And I don't know, I have this routine to always talk about the worst case. What could happen if you write this? Or what should we do if? And then maybe we stand on top of a couloir, everyone is stoked, and then I say... That fucks the vibe. Yeah. Then I'm standing there and I say, okay, guys, everything good? So just to talk about who is going to go first and who is second, third, that there is like kind of a structure. And yeah, what we do if an avalanche goes down, how we organize ourselves, and everyone is like, dude... I mean, not everyone, but I feel that
for myself as well. Yeah, it does.
Sometimes the vibe goes down. Obviously, like everyone is like avalanche, what we do, accident, stuff like that. And obviously, it's not so easy to be that person which kind of kills the vibe in that moment. I mean, then it takes like 2 minutes and everything is fine again. But I always have this. I always wanna bring this topic also for myself that I can also say, okay, I have talked about everyone is kind aware of what we are doing, and there is not happening chaos if something happens. And that's really important for me. It would be horrible for me if something happens and there is chaos.
Yeah.
Nobody expected the avalanche, everyone is like doing random stuff, and so therefore I think it's super important, and even if it kills the vibe, it's part of the game for me.
It's serious things which we are doing, but obviously, like, in a dream world, and I hope all of my friends which we lost are in a dream world now, you know, in a dream world you would just not have to think about, like, imagine doing all those sports without like, you know, without having this risk of dying or of an accident, man. Like, it would be just insane. Like, you stand somewhere up there and you're like, you know, you would just go and you would just do and just don't lose a single thought about the risk and about the consequences. And I know there is a few people out there which are exactly living this vibe, and I'm, you know, I'm stoked for them 100%, and I don't want to judge them by any means. But I can just not do that. Like, I can just not. That's just not the balance for me.
I mean, even if I want to.
I find myself mostly in situations where it's, you know, fair enough, which have like really low general risk level. I find myself in that sort of mood where I'm just absolutely not thinking about risk, and it's amazing. And I think it's also good sometimes, you know, especially when there is not a big risk of dying, just the risk of getting injured. Yeah, but I just, like, it would just be crazy, you know, if you wouldn't have to think about it. But
for sure.
I still love my sport, and I still love what I'm doing, even if I'm conscious and aware of the risk and thinking about it a lot / almost all the time.
Yeah, for sure. I think...
And it's the only way for me. It's the only way to have like a sustainable happiness and a sustainable, you know, stoke with what I'm doing. Everything else would be a lie to myself.
Yeah, and it would be also egoistic.
Very egoistic.
Probably talking about your parents, about your friends and everything. So I think it's good that it is.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, let's all try to be safe out there and yeah, it's, I hope everybody finds its balance and finds its answers for those questions. And yeah, hope everybody's going to be safe and happy out there.
Yeah, it was very interesting to talk about this topic, and I hope someone might have taken away something from our talk, or even not, or I don't know. But yeah, at least for me, it was very interesting again to talk about it. And yeah.
Much love to everyone. And yeah, branch it's forever. Love you, brother.